You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Mike Selsky is the Philadelphia Inquirer columnist. He's covered the 76ers for nearly 20 years. And Mike joins us on the program. All right, Mike, what do you think the mood is with Sixer fans?
I think the Philadelphia police need to guard all the bridges in and around the city because there's going to be some people heading there and ready to take the deep plunge, not to be too dark about it.
Where do you think the anger lies?
A lot of it at Ben Simmons. A lot of it at Ben Simmons. Because Ben violated kind of the first rule of Philadelphia sports, which is you can go down, but you better go down trying. Yeah. And the fact that he kind of withered away at the end there, clearly didn't want the ball in his hands. You know, that passed up dunk is going to be the subject of documentary filmmaking for years to come, I think.
And then you had Doc when he was questioned after the game, can you win a championship with him? And he answered it honestly. I was surprised he did, saying, I don't know that. Where prior to this, it felt like Doc was always there to remind the media, Ben Simmons is a special player. Can they win a championship with Ben Simmons?
They can win a championship with Ben Simmons, I think. I don't think they can win a championship with Ben Simmons as their point guard. You can't have a point guard abdicating his role in the offense completely to the degree that Simmons does. I mean, he just stands there under the basket and becomes a non-factor, a non-option. You can't even throw him the ball because he doesn't want to go to the foul line. It's a really complex, bad situation in that he's gotten worse in that regard since he's been in the league. I mean, his numbers were all down this season. There's been a lot made in Philadelphia about how Doc Rivers was going to be the new coach who was going to come in and, you know, unleash Ben. But if you look at Ben's numbers and you watch the quality of his play over the course of the season, he did not improve as a player under Doc. He got worse.
And then he doesn't even attempt field goals in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's so telling here, Mike, that he, and the mental aspect of this, this isn't something you just go into a gym and say, hey, come on in and shoot some free throws. Like this, there's more to this than just, we're going to fix your form, which would be really difficult to do as well. Do the 76ers have the infrastructure to be able to do this and say, all right, hey, we're going to take time. We learned, you know, from previous players that, you know, have the yips, shooting yips.
Well, I mean, Dan, let's be honest about this. They, as it turned out, they drafted players number one overall in back-to-back seasons in Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz, who can't shoot. I mean, this is, and it's not, you know, they try and they can't do it. They had a mental block about it. And we can, and you're right, we can talk all we want about Simmons' form. And I've written columns about this, about how his elbow flares out and his form is terrible and he's ambidextrous and maybe it would be better if he weren't. It's not about the form anymore. He does not want to go to the foul line. And to answer your question about whether the Sixers can sort this out, they had a dry run at this with Markel Fultz and they weren't able to do it. And now you've got it with Simmons all over again. And I think the worst part of it is that his teammates see it and they know it. You watch that clip of that passed up dunk again. You see Joel Embiid putting his hands in the air. Like, what are you doing, Ben? Just throw the ball down. And, you know, that kind of thing gums up an offense. It creates tension on a team where a team can't afford it. The scuttlebutt in Philadelphia is that this is it for Ben Simmons there. And at this point, I find it hard to disagree.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out of, does this become a Carson Wentz-like situation? That you almost feel like you have to let him go for the betterment of both the organization and the quarterback?
I think it's starker than the Wentz situation. There was still some debate and divide in Philadelphia over whether the Eagles ought to keep Wentz, whether the problems that the Eagles went through last season were solely on Wentz or mostly on Wentz. You know, there were questions about the offensive line, all that kind of stuff. This is far more naked. You can see it. He does not want to participate in the offense. And you can see how that trickles down. Look, Joel Embiid had 8 turnovers last night, and that's bad. And he didn't rise to the occasion in the way that Kevin Durant did or Giannis did the other night. But he's not the kind of player who you want creating off the dribble. You need a player, a point guard, who can get a player like Embiid and a player like Tobias Harris into the flow of an offense. And right now the Sixers don't have that, and everybody can see it, and all those eyes are going to one place, and that's Ben Simmons.
So what do you do in the offseason? Is there a trade market for Ben Simmons?
That's a great question. I mean, look, Daryl Morey tried during the season. I mean, they came very close to making that deal for James Harden. You know, they wanted Harden. They were willing to move Simmons to get it. The irony of all that is that Simmons came back after that trade fell through and Harden ended up with the Nets and played great for a while. But I think, is there the market that there once was? No, there can't possibly be after these seven games that he played against the Hawks. But I think Morey's going to have to try to get creative, because if they bring him back and they try to run this back without making some significant changes, boy, it's going to be a hard go for them next year in the city.
Is the process still going on, Mike?
You know, I feel like, Dan, I was an advocate of the process. I loved what Sam Hinkie was doing. I felt like the process sort of kind of ended once he resigned. There's been so much upheaval and so many changes since then. They've gone through Brian Colangelo. They went through a year without really a GM, where they ended up trading away Mikal Bridges for Zaire Smith. You know, they let Jimmy Butler walk and signed Tobias Harris instead. You know, now we have Doc and Daryl, you know, in here. The process has ended. I think we're far enough removed from what Hinkie was doing and was trying to do to say, look, you know, they took a big swing. It didn't work. And in some ways, Philadelphia was kind of the worst place for it, for trying something like this, because Philadelphia sports fans and sports followers are most comfortable in like a defensive crouch, right? They don't want to leave themselves open to the possibility of failure. They want to protect themselves as much as they can. That's why the series loss hurts so much, Dan, is that the Sixers were favored. It was one thing to have the Eagles beat the Patriots when Nick Foles, the backup, is leading them to championship glory. It's another thing when a team is supposed to win a series. Philadelphia hates that.
I use the analogy that if you could have Ben Simmons in a role that's similar to Draymond Green with Golden State, where he's the third or fourth option, where you know, his passing, defense, and rebounding, if there's a way to kind of, and it sounds strange to say it, that you got to kind of hide him or put him in a position where he can succeed, this is all you ask him to do. And I don't know if that's possible.
I'm not sure it is either, not with the money he's making. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you afford under the salary cap to have a guy who makes $30, $40 million a year, you know, be Draymond Green? I mean, nothing against Draymond. He's a terrific player, but, you know, he wasn't Steph Curry. He wasn't Kevin Durant. He wasn't Klay Thompson. So, you know, what do you do if you're the Sixers? As you said, you can't really hide a guy who's making that much money.
Just gives you more to write, Mike. They write these columns for you.
Hey, I'll take it, man. I'll take it every time.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Appreciate it.
Mike Sielski, who writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer, covering the 76ers for a couple of decades there. Yes, Paul.
You know, you compare him to Draymond Green, and when Draymond Green was a three-time All-Star, he was averaging like, you know, 14 points, 12 points a game. He wasn't a main option, but he was shooting like 73% from the free throw line. He was shooting 34% from three and shooting like four threes a game. He was a nice shooter.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, the mental side of this, that's where we don't understand. And it's really hard to correct. Because I could say to Ben Simmons, why don't you get together? Why don't you just watch Chris Mullin free throws? Just watch the flow that Molly had. Left-hander, look at the form and the feel that he has. And maybe, or hire Chris Mullin. I mean, if you got a guy making $40 million a year, bring in Chris Mullin as a shooting coach just to say, let me work with you. Like, what's the downside to that? But I think his form is not good because his elbow is out. And if you've ever tried to change your golf swing, it's really hard to do. And what happens is, when, you know, I've been trying to do it for 25 years to be a better player. What you do is you keep practicing the things that don't make you consistent or good. So Ben Simmons can go in the gym. He can shoot 1,000 free throws. It doesn't matter if he's not shooting it correctly. Lonzo Ball, same thing. I kept saying, if Lonzo looked at Kevin Durant, where Kevin starts on the left side of his head and gets over to right in the middle of his forehead, a little bit to the right. Lonzo has almost like it's a windshield wiper. That can't work because it takes too long to load up. If he shortened it a little bit, then I think he would get better results. We're seeing him shoot a little bit better, but it's not that as much as the confidence to take the shot. Ben didn't even, he wasn't even attempting shots. I mean, at least the Greek Freak will try. He'll attempt shots. He's not a good shooter, but he knows he has to keep shooting for that team. And by the way, he was spectacular in Game 7. He really was. But that was an entire team that played great. Because I called them bums after the first two games. Like, you have your opportunity to win. And they made me work because I picked them to beat the Nets, and I thought they're not a good enough team to beat the Nets, even with the Nets wounded. And they almost lost that. If Kevin Durant's wearing the correct size shoes, the fact that he wears 18s and he's a size 17 because he says, I'm faster aerodynamics or whatever it is. If he wears what he's supposed to wear, then we're talking about the Bucks bowing out of the playoffs. Yeah, Paul.
Going back to Ben Simmons, he's been in six playoff series in his career. In 2018, he shot 71% from the line in the playoffs. 2019, he shot 65% from the line. This year, he shot 34% from the line. So it's not like he couldn't do, 71%, you'd take that.
Yeah.
You can get by with that. It's half. It's getting worse.
By the way, the Greek Freak has at least 30 points in each of his last five games. That's the longest postseason streak by Bucks since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did that during the 1970 playoffs.
Stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that
what?
Stat of the day.
By the way, there's certain players that you watch and you go, man, they make it look really easy. Devin Booker is one of those players that if you haven't had the opportunity to watch him in a game, we see highlights, but when you watch him in a game, I'm always curious how you get your shots. Like, what do? Are you always running around? You float a little bit here. You beat people off the dribble. Devin Booker is talented enough to be a point guard, but he's a great shooting guard. But he put up a triple-double and just he floats. There's something about his game where he doesn't look like he has to work as hard for shots. There are guys who you're like, man, that guy, Reggie Miller, who will join us later on. Reg had to work to get his shots because he couldn't beat you off the dribble. There's certain players who just sort of float. They're in the ether. And then all of a sudden they get the ball and they make it look very easy. And this will be a coming out party for Devin Booker, even though last year in the bubble. But this is Trae Young. It feels like these playoffs, Trae Young and Devin Booker. Now, that doesn't mean these two teams are going to win, but it does mean you're going to get a chance to watch these young players. And, the Atlanta Hawks are more than Trae Young. To go into Philadelphia and win that game, and Trae Young did not play well, and this is where you get that opportunity to see a team play, because normally you're going to see, hey, there's four highlights of Trae Young on SportsCenter, and then you'll put up your score panel, and then that'll be it. Or the Phoenix Suns, and the Phoenix Suns win during the regular season, and you get three highlights of Devin Booker, maybe a Chris Paul mid-range jumper. That's it. But Kevin Huerter and John Collins, you got a Bogdanović on there too, Clint Capella. Gallinari's been on quite a few teams. Nate McMillan's done a wonderful job with that team. So there's some fun storylines. But it feels like the storylines today have to do with the teams that aren't in the postseason. Best and worst of the weekend, your phone calls. We'll get to those. Got play of the day, stat of the day. We'll settle on our poll question as well. Joe in Ohio leads us off. Hi, Joe. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Dan. Best and a lot of worst. I'm going to be quick. Best, U.S. Open and all the NBA games. Really fun weekend for both. Now, my worst. I'm not a Sixers fan at all. Don't have any affiliation. I was irrationally mad at Ben Simmons all weekend. I was at the gym yesterday. I shot 10 free throws left-handed to see what I could do. Never done it before. 4 for 10. It's impossible to be 30% as a... It's impossible. So that's one. Two, like you said earlier, I think we're giving him the benefit of the doubt being the number one pick. If he was picked at 11, no one would even consider what he's doing. You're like, oh, he's a solid player, right? He's like a Draymond Green, like you said. 3, because he's an all-star and he has expectations, I think that might have been the worst NBA playoff performance in the history of time, and it was infuriating to watch, and I'm not even a fan. Okay, I got everything in. I'm sorry for that.
Thank you, Joe. The benefit. Did you see what he was doing with that? No, he wasn't. I just gave him credit for that. Yeah, McLevin.
Isn't some of this pressure? Like, you could just tell some guys don't want it. I hate to say it. I said before, James Harden in Game 7 is not the same James Harden that you see in every other game.
I don't know how healthy he was. I applauded him for being out there. I don't think he helped them when he was out there. But this is a Game 7, and it shouldn't be just reliant on Kevin Durant. And it was, and you got James Harden had another bad playoff performance in a Game 7.
Yeah, he was 2 for 12 from 3, and one of them was a lucky bank shot.
Yes, yes. I know he's not 100%.
But he's going to do the same thing next year. No, he's done it. We've seen it now. And Tobias Harris, I know I keep talking about Tobias Harris. He was 2 for 11 in that game they blew the... And you like Tobias.
I like him, except for when there's pressure on him. Because, you know, hey, he's a great regular season player. There are certain guys who are just equipped for the postseason. They are. I mean, the Sixers got a lot of guys who are... three quarters all-stars. Like, they're really good in three quarters. And then they get to the fourth quarter and you go, I don't want to shoot it. You shoot it. Can't have that. But to think this is just, let me fix Ben Simmons' form and it all goes away, that's not the case. You see this in all sports. You saw this yesterday at the U.S. Open with Bryson DeChambeau. He fell apart. It happens. Guys get tense. That's where certain guys seize the moment. Tiger always was like, oh, the pressure's on?
Yes.
Curt Schilling, pressure's on?
Yes.
They're just certain players. Jeter, oh, pressure's on? Yes. Like, they absorb it. They want it. You know, Tom Brady, game on the line. I want it. I'm not going to fold. I don't back down. 28-3, come on, let's go. We get a touchdown here. Let's put a little pressure. That's what you want. Game on the line. Give me the ball. I'll make some. Everybody in the building knows I'm going to take the shot. Everybody knew Kevin Durant was going to take that shot, which drives me crazy.
You didn't like it when they just had one guy covering them?
No.
I thought you'd love that.
No, you know. PJ Tucker, nice job. But I got to take the ball out of Kevin Durant's hands. If Joe Harris hits the jumper, okay. Even Harden at that point. I got to take the ball out of his hands. Make him pick up his dribble sooner than he wants. You had Holiday, who was sort of in no man's land. He's like, should I leave my man? Should I come over here and double? He hits the jumper. I'm going... Giannis is 6 feet away. There's only one guy. Everybody knew who was getting it. There's going to be a pick down low. He's going to pop up. He'll get the ball, and then he'll go one-on-one. Make him pass the ball. Even if James Harden takes the shot, I don't want Kevin Durant to take the shot. Hey, the best guy in the world right now is going to get a chance to take a jumper. Tough jumper. No. I don't want him taking any jumper. Best guy on the planet had to pass the ball in the final shot. You know, the Bucks are lucky. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Our next guest, a Hall of Famer, UCLA, Ann Myers Drysdale, the Phoenix Suns vice president and the Phoenix Suns color analyst for Fox Sports Arizona. Annie, good to talk to you this morning. If I would have said to you back in, say, November, the Phoenix Suns are going to be playing in the Western Conference Finals, what would you have said?
Well, being in the organization for 14 years now, I would have said yes, because of the way they ended in the bubble last year. And then certainly with, Monty's really done an incredible job and his staff as far as getting these guys to believe in his system and the team and it's one for all.
Also, we saw them. I think people might have looked at them as like a cute team in the bubble when they went 8-0 and a good story, and then we weren't sure if it would carry over. But then getting Chris Paul, like, what did you see different with Chris Paul on that team that maybe was lacking?
Yeah, and certainly Chris is unbelievable as far as his leadership and his relationship with Monty, Willie Green. And, you know, having Jay Crowder was huge. Certainly the guards we brought in, but just the maturation of Ayton, DeAndre, and Mikhail Bridges, and certainly Cam Johnson. It's almost like we are peaking for the playoffs. There's no question about it. We have the second best record in the league, and it was interesting going into the playoffs that people didn't pick us at all. I mean, we're still the underdog, even against the Clippers.
Chris Paul's status for game two is what?
We don't know yet. We haven't been told, and it's just day to day. But, you know, just having him on the court and his presence, his ability to communicate with the other players, I think is such a big plus. And he's always in their ear. And everybody, you know, we've talked about it all season long, whether Eddie Johnson or Kevin Ray and myself. And, you know, when we've had the chance to talk to Monty and some of the players. And, you know, Chris is in their ear, on the floor, on the bench, you know, it just in the locker room, constantly talking to them. And, you know, Book has said it too, is nobody gets upset at each other, no matter how much, you know, there may be some kind of, you know, aggressive talk to each other, but it's all in good faith and all about the team getting better. And, you know, Chris has brought that leadership, and Monty continues to talk about it.
For those who haven't seen Devin Booker, how would you describe his game?
Well, Book, he is coming into Phoenix, and we had a lot of guards at that time and a lot left. And he was a rookie that had sat the bench at Kentucky and came in, and P.J. Tucker was there at the time. And I think that really helped his game also. Just a lot of different people that have come in. He had, six different coaches. So the ability to be able to learn under a lot of different people and sustain his positiveness. But I know that Kobe was a great influence on him. His father has been a great influence on him. But if you look for, you know, Dame has got an unbelievable game. You know, Steph's got an unbelievable game. You go down the list. But right now, Book is probably the most like Kobe in the way that he plays the game. And certainly his mid-range game is as good as Chris Paul's. But his ability to shoot the three and handle the ball and you know, he really wants to be recognized for his defense, too. His defense has gotten better, but, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder in the sense that hasn't been picked for the All-Star games. He's been alternate and certainly has not made any of the teams, whether it be defensive or all NBA. And that sticks with you and it drives you. But I think his game is most like Kobe's, but I also think it's most like Devin Booker's.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, the Kobe comparison, because it's a little tricky because Kobe had this attack mode constantly. Like, he wanted to kill you. And Booker, I don't know if he has that temperament that he wants to continue to bring it.
Yeah, but if you they were pretty close and they talked a lot. And I think, you know, not too many people have what Kobe had. I think Russ Westbrook probably has that the most in the game right now for me. That I watch. And, but, you know, Devin shows it in a different way. And he's got a lot of killer instinct, but it shows a different way. And, you know, nobody's Kobe, nobody's Michael, nobody's LeBron. And, but certainly I think that Devin Booker has established himself. But again, you know, a lot of people talk about Donovan Mitchell. They're talking about Mitchell more in Utah than they are about Book in Phoenix. But, you know, Booker's he's just taking his time, and I think people will see. I mean, what he did yesterday, the triple-double. And, you know, he's been a tough rebounding guard. He rebounds, seven rebounds a game, and he can get four to six assists a game, but last night he got 11. So, you know, he's capable, and we've seen him, you know, against Boston, he had 70 points. So we know that he can score. And but when he's not scoring, he can do other things. And I think that that's the one thing that he prides himself on, as Kobe did. You know, there's games where it just doesn't work for you. But certainly I think that, you know, playing defense, setting screens, blocking out, and he's recognizing that more and more.
Ann Myers Drysdale, the Hall of Famer, Phoenix Suns vice president, Suns color analyst for Fox Sports Arizona. How well did you know Kobe?
His dad coached the LA Sparks. And so that's where I really first got to know Kobe. And certainly he lives down in Orange County where I'm at. And we've had interaction and so forth, and probably not as close. And what I love is a lot of the WNBA players like a Jewel Lloyd and Sabrina Ionescu and Diana. Diana Taurasi has been given the White Mamba name by Kobe, and certainly grew up in Southern California idolizing him. And so he's been around the WNBA quite a bit, and that was kind of a big loss for that side. And as a matter of fact, yesterday's game, the New York Liberty at Los Angeles Sparks, was the day of the 25th anniversary of the WNBA starting. And what's unfortunate that it didn't get a lot of coverage. It was tough because you're going against not only the two games, but also the U.S. Open. But, because he was so involved with women's basketball and his camps, I got to know him through there and would see him at a lot of different games.
We've been talking a lot about Ben Simmons today, and I'm guessing with your title as Suns vice president, you can't talk about somebody individually. I don't know. I don't want to get you in trouble. But, this mental hurdle that we have, it's not necessarily it's physical, but then it becomes mental. Like, I don't know, Annie, when athletes have to think, that's usually when they get in trouble. They usually react here. And I don't know, like Ben Simmons is not a quick fix where you just go, hey, work on your form. It's mental now.
Well, I'm not going to say anything on that. But, my late husband, Don Breisfeld, used to say, don't think, it hurts the ball club. And you just go out there and play. I remember Magic when he played for the Los Angeles Lakers, and he was limited. He was very young when he came in with the Lakers, but he was limited in a lot of things that he could do and couldn't do. But the one thing that Magic did is every summer he worked on what he couldn't do, and he improved on that, whether it be his outsized shot or his defense and so forth. But, the players that want to get better and want to be great work on the things that they're not quite as efficient on.
When you went to the Pacers camp, who were the players with the Pacers?
Johnny Davis, who I had known with the Pan Am Games. And we had George McGinnis and Alex English, Brad Davis. It was a free agent rookie camp. So I was signed as a free agent. I wasn't drafted. And I'm trying to, it's been a long time, Dan.
I know.
It's been a long time.
but for those of us in the audience who don't know, explain, you came out of UCLA. And you were like, this was a big deal. You were invited to camp. Were you treated as just a basketball player when you got there?
Well, there were a lot of things that had happened to prepare me for that, whether my whole life playing sports and in the game of basketball and playing USA basketball and playing against the men growing up and playing at Pauley Pavilion and pickup games. But certainly my brother David playing for Coach John Wooden and winning a couple of national championships. And he was the number one draft pick for the Lakers and was in the trade that brought Kareem to L.A. And so David was playing in Milwaukee. When I went to UCLA, it was a human interest story. So the media talked a lot about my brother David and myself. I went to the Olympics. We won silver. It was the first time they had women's basketball in the Olympics. My senior year, we won the national championship. So, being in Los Angeles, being at UCLA, I had received a lot of exposure. And I was planning to go to the 1980 Olympics. So you still had to be amateur at that time. So the new owner of the Indiana Pacers was Sam Nasi. I got a call when I came back from Russia in the Spartacade games. And certainly David being in the NBA, I knew a lot of people in the NBA, players and coaches being on all these different international teams. So it's not like people didn't know who I was. It's certainly a thing where, I was just as surprised as anybody else, but I thought it was an opportunity of a lifetime, that a lot of people don't get asked for something like that. And I had a lot of belief in my ability, whether a lot of people thought it was a publicity stunt. I know that there were, but at that time I didn't think that. I thought it was, somebody was giving me a chance to do something, and I took it. And so mentally, physically, emotionally, it was the best I was ever prepared to play the game. I focused on working out with one of my other brothers, and mentally he got in my head, and physically I was talking to David and talking to other people. I was ready, but It was a different situation. Did they treat me, you know, Sook Leonard, who was the coach, came out several times to California to talk me out of it. He did not want this to happen.
Why?
Jack McCloskey. Well, I think he just grew up in a different generation. I mean, this was, we're not even going to have some girl tryout in the NBA. That certainly was the attitude of a lot of the media. And, and I'd never known, Dan, what a press conference was. I just, you know, one, I wasn't very good at talking, but a press conference, what was that? So we had a press conference, and certainly I'd been interviewed a lot when I was at UCLA and even before that in high school and elementary school. But now this press conference was pretty attacking by the media, and I was very caught off guard on that. So I didn't know how to deal with that very well. But I got to Indiana, and, you know, it was going to happen. I mean, the owner was going to have it happen, and I agreed to do it. So Jack McCloskey was one of the assistants, and he said, you know, at one point, fundamentally, I was better than half the guys out there. So that's from my UCLA days, certainly, and knowing the fundamentals. But, you know, it was a great experience for me. I mean, we had the 3 days of two-a-day practices. And I know it was tough on the guys because it was a no-win situation for them. You know, if they block my shot, no big deal. It's only a girl. But if I made a shot, you let some girl beat you, which is the name of my book. You let some girl beat you. Come on, Pat. You know, or Dan, you and I, if we played and if I beat you, what do you think the Danettes would say?
You wouldn't beat me.
Oh.
You would not beat me.
Well, but see, that's your attitude. Well, you know, you went to Dayton. I went to UCLA.
But it wouldn't. No, but it wouldn't matter who I was talking to. See, I would say they wouldn't beat me.
I know. That's who you are.
Yes.
That's what I love about you.
Yes.
And you have to have that attitude. And that's what I had going in to play against the guys, because I'd always played against the guys. So even though a lot of people felt, well, she can't do this and she can't do that and she can't do that. And I always thought, what can I do? You know? And even now, when I was the general manager for the Phoenix Mercury, and even when I look at the NBA, I look at what guys can do. Not, you know, there's a deficiency in everybody's game. But look at, why did you pick that person? Well, you picked them for a certain reason. So I want to see what they can do. And certainly as far as, you know, mentally, as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's a lot of, you've got to be in a good frame of mind. And you have to have a lot of positive people around you. And so with my tryout, I did have positive people around me, and thank goodness I didn't have social media then. Because, you know,
how close are we to a female head coach in the NBA?
I think it's going to happen. There's no question. The fact that we're talking about it and it's been exposed out there so much. It's like, you know, Charles was talking last night about, you know, the black coaches. You've got to have the conversations. You've got to bring the issues out. So people are aware of them, and whether you agree or disagree, you have to have, I think, the conversation to be able to talk about it. And the fact that we've talked about having a woman coach in the NBA, it's going to happen. And now who that organization is going to be, who that general manager and owner is going to be positive about it, then you got to sell your media, your local market, because the media is not for it, you know, and that's very obvious. But it's going to be somebody that's got to be a strong personality that's been in the game and has had things said about them already. And certainly we know that Becky Hammon is out there, and people have talked about Dawn Staley at South Carolina. But, you know, this was talk when Pat Summitt and Tara Vanderveer, there was talk about them taking over as coaches on the men's side. So, you know, it's not like this is new. It's been going on for a long time.
It's great to talk to you as always. And
oh, it's so good to see you.
And how is your jumper? When's the last time you took a shot?
Well, I got a basket in the backyard, so I'll shoot my little three bankers.
Okay.
That drives me nuts that the bank shot almost disappeared. Ah, it was the bank shot.
Well, that was one of Coach Wooden. He loved the bank shot. Tim Duncan.
Well, see, it's been proven that it's a higher percentage of the shot going in. And if it's missed, 70% of the shots are dropped within that area. So you give an opportunity to your teammate to get a rebound.
But I don't miss, so they don't have to worry about a rebound, Ann. You know that. You know that. Great to talk to you.
Is that what Reggie says?
I don't mess with Reggie. When it comes to a shooting contest, I don't mess with Reggie. I know my limitations, Annie. Hey, thanks for joining us, and good luck the rest of the series.
Hey, thanks, and watch the Mercury, too.
That's Ann Myers Drysdale, the Phoenix Suns vice president and color analyst for Fox Sports Arizona. We worked the Olympics a couple times. We'd go back. We'd always get I'm just competitive. I don't know. It feels like she's my sister, where I would just get competitive. And, you know, I love that. No, it doesn't matter who's on the other end. I still want to, you know, I want to take you to the hoop. Yeah, Paulie.
That must have been a huge deal at the time, coverage-wise, when she went to Pacers camp. Yeah. I mean, that's I would assume that's unprecedented.
Yeah, at the time it was. And I remember Nancy Lieberman would play. She played on the Washington Generals, who faced the Globetrotters, her and her then husband, Tim. And that was a big deal as well. But, you know, I never played a game with Ann, but I did with Nancy. And I played with a few Dallas Cowboys, including Ken Norton Jr. and Dion, in a pickup game in Dallas. And, you know, when the game gets started, Nancy, you just, it wasn't like that was a woman out there. It was just, she was just a player, which is, you know, the best compliment you could give, I think. Yeah, see.
Should we start a movement to save the bank shot? I could really see that being something that we pick up.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Reggie Miller will be on the call for the Eastern Conference Finals on TNT between the Hawks and the Bucks beginning Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern. Yeah, I'm sure you predicted that, didn't you, Reg? Hawks versus the Bucks.
We went to Vegas, didn't we? Didn't we put our money down on the Bucks and the Hawks?
Well, I had the Bucks.
It was a blur for you and I vaguely remember, but I remember you and I distinctly having that conversation. Hey, Reg, let's go put down our money on the Milwaukee Bucks and the Atlanta Hawks to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. Wow.
All right, before we get to the winning teams, let me start with the losing teams. Seems sure. They're more interesting here. Let me start with Philadelphia. I brought this up to you last year. I think I brought this up to you in the last 2 years with Ben Simmons. What would you do with Ben Simmons? If you're Philadelphia, you want to keep him. So what do you do?
I think you go out to a hardware store and you buy all the locks possible. You put them in a gym and you padlock the door shut. I think, look.
But his form is bad, Reg.
He is going to take a beating this offseason, and a little bit rightfully so. It's not so much that he wasn't shooting. He wasn't aggressive at all. And I don't mind him missing jump shots or whatever, but put pressure on the defense. He wasn't putting any pressure on Atlanta whatsoever. And at 6'10", in that frame, all I got to do is put him in the mid-post and let him get a couple crab dribbles until he gets into the paint, collapse the defense. That's being aggressive. It's not always taking shots. People assume that when I tell people to be aggressive, it's always about shots. Sometimes it's good to be a decoy and create offense for others, which he's good at. He wasn't even doing that, Dan, and that's the problem.
Yeah, but now it's mental, Reg. He didn't attempt field goals in the fourth quarter in, what, 5 of the 7 games. He wasn't. They have to put him down in the low post to hide him because then somebody has to guard him down there as opposed to on the perimeter.
Look, as much as I love Doc Rivers, I've been on this show and said he's one of the best coaches. He's got to take partial blame of this because, look, we all were reading the stats coming into Game 7. We knew that he hadn't attempted shots. We knew that he hadn't been aggressive. This kind of has to go – the blowback has to go a little bit to Doc as well because Doc knew this. But here's the other thing. Where does he turn to? Is he turning to Shake Milton? Is he turning to Thibault? Where do you want him to turn when you have a, 23, 24? I'm not exactly sure how old Ben Simmons is. Do you crush his confidence by taking him out? I mean, are you going to grow with him? So Doc has to look in the mirror a little bit because Doc left him out there. He left him on the island out there as well. But where does Doc turn to?
But I wonder if he can stay in Philadelphia.
Well, look, someone will open up the piggy bank for him. You know that, right?
Yeah, but so. I don't, it's, you know, you're not going to get dollar for dollar for him. It's not like, hey, we're going to trade him to Portland to get Dame Lillard.
Right.
I mean, I don't know where you can send him and what you could get in return. Almost feels like there's a little addition by subtraction here, Reg.
And I think they kind of did that with their overall number one pick a few years ago in Markelle Fultz, right?
Yeah.
Did Markelle Fultz have a little dips and a hitch in his shot? And he was the overall number one pick. He was supposed to be teamed with Ben Simmons. It was supposed to be the backcourt of the future. And it was, you know, addition by subtraction again. So you see what you can get, maybe a couple first round draft picks, get younger and get lucky in the draft again. But I wouldn't close the book on Ben Simmons because he is such a young player. I agree with you that it is mental at this aspect, but this is something that can be corrected. It's a shame to see because he's such a good kid and he has so much physical talent. He just needs a jump shot.
Yeah, but here's the thing though, Reg. There's one thing, his form is not good. And sure. And then the mental aspect of this, I know they're combined because if all of a sudden he starts making shots, it's amazing that you feel a lot more confident about your game. And I don't know, do I work on the mental side of this with Ben Simmons and then the physical, or does it have to be the other way?
I think you have to work on the mental side first because the physical side will come. That's just repetition, being in the gym and getting your reps in. The mental approach, I think, will take longer because, as you and I know, how Philly fans are and how talk radio is right as we speak in Philadelphia, they are crucifying this young man. And mentally, how is he going to come to grips with that? And he has to get stronger mentally first before the physical aspects can take place.
Yeah, he's just got to try to survive until football season starts in Philadelphia. That'll take away the heat from him.
Good luck with that. Good luck.
The Nets, Durant was spectacular. And I don't know James Harden's health status there, Reg. But James Harden in closeout games is, I think, 1-7 now. He was not good yesterday either.
Well, he really wasn't good in the three games he came back for the Nets.
Yeah.
He was just out there. And they needed another player with Kyrie being down with the ankle injury. And you're right. Superhuman effort by Kevin Durant. But I put a tweet out after game five, after that unbelievable game that he had to bring them back when they were down double digits against Milwaukee. This is a guy that's coming off an Achilles tear.
I know.
And all season long, you have rested him. And he played 48 minutes. If you would have rested him during the regular season, again, winning game five, that was the game they needed to get to go up 3-2. Game six, it's a luxury. It's not a necessity. I would have rested him. And certainly I would have rested James Harden, who played 45 minutes in game five and gave them 5 points. The fact that they came back and played them in game six, everyone killed me.
Yeah, you're right.
No, you go after game six. You go, no, I want to win one game and I'll sort the rest out later. I'm pushing all my chips in the game. Wouldn't you have rather, now in hindsight, wouldn't you have rather had a rested on 3 days rest, Kevin Durant, and certainly James Harden for game seven? Did you see how they were just hung over in exhaustion, both teams? But wouldn't you have loved to have had a fresh Kevin Durant and a fresh James Harden in game seven? 40 minutes they played in game six, and Harden was a little bit better than game five. He didn't shoot the ball great. And KD was KD. But the Bucks played it smart. Don't blow them out. Keep it close so they have to play those minutes. 40 minutes both by them in game six. And they come back. And what did KD get? 53? He played the whole game and overtime.
Yeah.
And what, 45 for James Harden? Maybe more in that overtime deciding game seven, it was too much. And on top, and having said all that, they were a size 16 shoe on the line from winning that. Having me said all that, they still could have won that. But I'm just saying, I needed one game. If I'm the Nets, I don't care if I'm going to take a beating for not having them play in game six. I want them fresh for game seven, and I'll worry about game one when game one comes in the conference finals. Now, if the Nets would have lost game five, I never would have said that, because that's out of necessity that he has to play game six. But it was a luxury that they won. I don't need game six. I need game seven.
The Utah Jazz had a great opportunity, missed opportunity. And, I mean, we could look at Mike Conley not being in there. I mean, you win the first two games, Reg, and then lose four straight.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell wasn't 100%. But still, you have home court advantage. And the defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, got abused. I don't – was this a successful season for the Jazz?
Successful regular season. You had the overall best record. You had the defensive player of the year in Rudy Gobert. You had the sixth man of the year in Jordan Clarkson.
But doesn't that make it worse, Reg?
It does. And then, Coach Snyder was almost coach of the year. So you almost had three of the top awards on your team. And yet you're up 25 in the second half.
I know.
On the road. And it's a closeout scenario for you. You've got to close the door, and by any means necessary, you've got to get that game six back to Salt Lake City for game seven. So having highlighted all that, it's disappointing if you're a Jazz fan, because you can't be 25. Now, look, I know comebacks happen. I've been a part of them, and I'm on both sides. But you've got to win that game, Dan. You can't be up 25 in the second half. It's one thing to be up early, 25. But in the third quarter, with the firepower they have, you got to win that game.
Talking to Reggie Miller, Hall of Famer. Reg will be on the call Eastern Conference Finals. That will be Hawks-Bucks. That'll be Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern. More of a coming out party for Trae Young or Devin Booker, in your opinion?
I think I said on this show, the one person I was excited to see in these playoffs above everyone else was Devin Booker. Real basketball minds like yourselves and mine, we know, we understand true players. Devin Booker is a true player. He just has been on crappy teams his whole career, his whole young career.
Yeah.
And we're finally getting a chance. We caught a glimpse of it in the bubble last season when they went 8-0, and everyone was kind of, what was the NBA going to look like? Everyone convened in one place. So we caught a glimpse of that, even though they didn't make the playoffs. They were the only team to be undefeated down there. And then when they added Chris Paul, they exploded this year, second best record in the West. But Devin Booker, I've said all along, and people thought I was crazy, because his idol is Kobe Bryant. And he has taken on that mentality, that mama mentality, by any means necessary. And I love the dog that's in him, and I'm glad that people are finally seeing it. Trae Young has been great. Don't get me wrong. What he's done on the Eastern Shore board has been fantastic, taking out the Knicks and the Sixers. But Devin Booker, I can't believe he didn't make one of the All-NBA teams. I don't know who's voting on this.
Not me.
Not me.
Not me. Did the NBA have a good season? When you now let me preface this. You know, they wanted a short season, very little off season, and then a battle of injuries with marquee players, and now four non-premier teams remaining in the playoffs. Has the NBA had a good year?
Well, one thing I will say, I don't want fans hitting me on Twitter, hitting you on Twitter. I don't want to hear about conspiracy theories anymore. I don't want to hear about refs or Adam Silver wanting the big name teams. I don't want to hear all that, because they had a shot to have Brooklyn and Philly in the conference finals. You've got Steph out in the playing game. You've got LeBron James out in the first round. I don't want to hear all that. The best teams win. What is a success? It's time for new blood. We would never know the story of Trae Young, of Devin Booker, of Donovan Mitchell to a certain extent if it wasn't for these playoffs. So you need new blood. LeBron James can't play forever. Chris Paul can't play forever. Kevin Durant has shown why he was the best player before the Achilles injury and after the Achilles injury. But we need some of these 20-year-olds to show up, and they have. So I know the ratings probably won't be great, but I love new blood. I love smaller markets being on the biggest stage like Milwaukee.
Wait a minute. If we were doing a pickup game, and it's LeBron and KD, and you have first pick.
Well, pickup game, you need buckets. I'm going with KD.
Okay. If you were going to have one guy for a season, just one year, is KD better than LeBron James?
At this point of his career, like LeBron at 36 or LeBron at 30?
Right now, today. Are you betting against LeBron?
I would never bet against LeBron. But right now, what KD showed me those last three ball games, we like to call Kawhi Leonard the Terminator because we feel like he's a machine. He just does it over and over. For this dude to play 48, come back with 40, and come back with 53 minutes straight in that performance, those performances, I'm rolling with Kevin Durant.
LeBron's like the Terminator, man. Like, I would not bet against him. I wouldn't bet against Brady. I wouldn't bet against LeBron. Just wouldn't.
Look what KD did.
No, I understand all of that. And KD is playing better, certainly offensively, scoring-wise.
Right.
I wouldn't bet against, I don't know. I wouldn't bet against LeBron. I just wouldn't.
How about this? This is the best way. Let's just flip-flop them on their current teams.
Okay.
If KD was on the Lakers this year versus Phoenix, and LeBron was on Brooklyn in that closeout situation versus Milwaukee, does it end up the same way?
Just
flip-flop them. KD on the Lakers going against Phoenix, and LeBron on Brooklyn going against Milwaukee.
I'm guessing Durant might have been able to carry them.
I think so.
Scoring-wise in the first round. Scoring-wise.
Right.
LeBron would have made the Nets different. And the backup players different. You know, it's one thing to know you're going to get the ball as opposed to, you know, we're just watching KD. LeBron, right. LeBron is inclusive. KD is not inclusive. KD is just dominating. So it would be a different Nets. Like, I would hope that, you know, Joe Harris would actually show up. Like, some of the other players would show up there, and LeBron would probably be demanding that because he would be inclusive. Whereas,
okay, so what I just laid out to you is basically was the talk of the 80s and up to the early 90s. Would you take Magic Johnson or would you take Michael Jordan? Because that's basically what you just said. One's inclusive and one is just a dominant, right?
Yeah.
So would you take Magic Johnson to set everyone else up and be the winner? Or would you take one of the most dominating scorers and mentally tough players of their
generation? LeBron's going to be the greatest scorer of all time. Magic was not a scorer. Like, LeBron is one of the great scorers of all time. So I get Magic, distributor. Mm-hmm. I get a better defender. I get now not as good a passer, and then I get a far better scorer. So LeBron's different than Magic. You know, Magic was limited offensively. LeBron is not so much. Right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. It depends. If I put Magic on the Bulls, do they still win 6 titles?
And are you putting MJ on the Lakers?
Yeah.
With Kareem?
Oh, I know.
With Big Game James? With Michael Cooper? With Byron Scott?
But how would they have done with Jordan? I don't know if they would have enjoyed it as much as they did with Magic. Right?
I don't think they would have been the showtime. It would have been showtime.
It would have been right? It would have been me time. It would have been right. Mike time. Yeah.
Hey, Mike. Dan said that, not me. Theodore said that.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of Jordan. He'd say it too. He'd be like, yeah, it'd be about me though. Would they be as good with Mike as opposed to would the Bulls be as good with Magic?
Maybe not six. I would say four. Maybe not six, but four.
I think the Lakers would have too much talent to be denied, whereas I don't, as great as Magic was, I don't think the Bulls would have had enough scoring around him.
I think Mike made Steve Kerr, Paxson, Scotty to a certain degree. He made those, Judd Buchler, he made those guys relevant.
What are you doing today? You have no NBA?
No, this is crazy.
No, it's good. We need to take a breather.
That was a big weekend.
That was crazy.
It was a big weekend to digest.
Yeah.
Look, I'm all in for new blood. I know people are probably not happy, but
Could you bet against the Clippers right now? Because
I still have Phoenix winning it all.
Oh, really?
I have Phoenix winning it all.
Okay.
I have Phoenix winning it all.
Okay.
After seeing them up close, seeing how their defense is. Now, I'll be curious to see conditioning-wise how CP3 is coming back.
Yep.
But if he hasn't missed a beat, I still like Phoenix to win it all. That includes the winner of Milwaukee-Atlanta, which a lot of people are going to assume is Milwaukee. I'm still rolling with Phoenix.
All right, Reg. Great to talk to you, bud.
I love these spirited conversations with you. This is why our friendship has endured, because a lot of times we may agree to disagree, but at the end of the day, I always end up agreeing with you, Dan.
We have that and shooting in common.
Do we? Okay, we do.
Let's take a break. No. All I know is Reg laughed at me after a practice at Indiana when I was shooting against Mark Jackson. And Reggie wouldn't even stay and watch. He wouldn't stay and watch. He laughed at me and went into the locker room. That still hurts, Reg.
It's called, I was trying to build your confidence.
No, you did not. You laughed at me. You went, not staying around for this. And then you started laughing. You ran off the floor.
I love you, Theo.
Thank you, Reg. That's Reggie Miller. Be on the call Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern, TNT, the Eastern Conference Finals.